number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You know the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Let it not be said that I do not try to cover as many things in the news as possible, even when it disgusts me, even when it drives me crazy, even when I don't feel it's on a level of my personal importance, but I know it is important in the larger scheme. The New England Patriots had a bad day in court in the ridiculous Deflategate scandal. We've just been waiting for this to come back into the news. In fact, Adam and I even said, oh my God, that's coming up? When it was in the news that, yeah, they were going to start hearing arguments in court in New York on Thursday. And sure enough, they did. And it was not a good day for the New England Patriots. So here's what I take out of this. We're going to give a couple of more days of testimony, or these judges are going to try to find out if the NFL has the right or the authority to suspend Tom Brady for the four games and basically uplifting the appeal that Brady was able to win when Judge Richard Berman said, you can't suspend him. And so the NFL appealed that, and this is what we're getting today. I still can't believe that almost a year and a half later, we are still in a position to argue whether or not there was a deflation of those footballs in an AFC championship game a year ago. That we still have to have this in the news. But it's not about that. It's not about whether or not the New England Patriots cheated. It's no longer about whether or not Tom Brady orchestrated the deflation of the footballs and knew that the footballs were being deflated on his behalf, and thus in some way gained a competitive advantage against the rules of the game. No. It is not about that anymore. What this story is now is about Roger Goodell and the NFL pride in that office in New York City. That's what this is about. It is about Roger Goodell saving face. Because no matter how you slice it, Tom Brady kicked him in the face last year. Kicked him right in the face. He took this suspension where people didn't think to go. He took it to court. He was not going to ever admit that he had anything to do with this. It was one consistent thing throughout this whole Deflategate nonsense was that Tom Brady was never going to take a suspension, ever. He couldn't, because no matter what he says at any press conference, the fact that if he sits out one game for this, in the eyes of the public, he admitted that he cheated. And he was never going to let the NFL force him to do that. And it makes perfect sense. I wouldn't. Even if I stood on the soapbox every single day and said, you know, this is not an admission of guilt. I'm doing this for the good of my team. To the rest of America, blah, 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 team, blah, blah, Patriots, blah, 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 guilty. That's the way America is going to hear that. If he takes one game, two games, three games, or all four games, it doesn't matter what he says. It doesn't matter what PR spin he puts on it. It doesn't matter. He sits out any one of these games on his own accord, he is going to have to deal with the public perception that he's a cheater and that everything about him and his legacy is tarnished. So what did he do? He fought right back and punched Roger Goodell in the face. This was embarrassing to the league. Are you kidding me? It was embarrassing. And you know what? That's why Goodell is continuing to fight this. Because the star NFL football player decided to take on the NFL and he won. And they can't have this. They can't have this. So the New England Patriots did have a bad day today. And it doesn't look good right now. But listen, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how they spin stuff later on. I'm sure they're going to. But nevertheless, the NFL is going to continue to fight this, even though in the end, this is still dumb. I'm sorry, it's dumb. And don't tell me it's on a level, a different level of Spygate. It wasn't, and you know it, and you know that. We're talking about a couple of, what, a half a pound in a football, in a game they routed, in a game they would have routed anyway. Yeah, maybe we don't like the idea of those kind of rules being circumvented, but this, the science was shoddy. The Wells report wasn't all that definitive. I thought Goodell completely and utterly overreacted and was extending the punishment because of what happened in 2007 with Spygate. That was on his watch too. And now this is now continuing to be a story. And now we don't know if Tom Brady is going to start in the beginning of the season. And let me tell you what we saw this year, the Patriots were one game away, one win away from hosting all the games in the playoffs. And imagine if they were able to do that. Would the Broncos be able to go on the road and beat the Patriots? Maybe. That defense was pretty good. But I would have liked the Patriots a lot. And they were one win away, one lazy Miami loss at the end of the season away from getting that done. You suspend Tom Brady for four games, even if Jimmy Garoppolo goes 2-2. Even if they start out of the gate, 2-2, that could put them behind and keep them behind in that race throughout the season. That it's something now I'm going to have to pay attention to because I like the NFL. I need to know the stories of the NFL. I need to know the ramification of those stories in the NFL, and I got to cover it. It was like the Ray Rice thing. That Ray Rice video disgusted me, and it really was an embarrassment for the league how they handled that. And after a while, I was kind of like, all right, but it was important because it meant Ray Rice's career was in jeopardy, how the NFL handled these kind of disciplines, how the NFL botched this and what they were going to do going forward. And domestic violence is a serious issue that needs to be addressed by leagues, how they handle it going forward. There were a lot of ramifications to that. That were outside the X's and O's of the game. That were outside the normal, hey, we're talking combine, we're talking draft, we're talking offseason workouts, we're talking camp. It was different. This might be the same thing. But make no mistake, I still think Deflategate is a waste of time. I still think the window for Deflategate has come and gone. This is about putting a story in the news, nothing more than pride. And let me ask you, is the NFL diminished in your eyes at all? Is the product devalued in any way at all by you? Are you watching less of it? Are you playing less fantasy football? Are you consuming and buying less merchandise because the NFL had their butts handed to them by Tom Brady in a court of law last year? Goodell needs to get over this. Now, somebody might say, yeah, but Tony, this opens up a can of worms. Let every player take them to court if they need to. Most won't. Because most of what Roger Goodell deals in with discipline, most of what he deals in with discipline is stuff you don't fight in court because it doesn't affect legacy. Oh, you speared a guy, you're going to get fined and suspended a game. Or that's an illegal hit. Or do you really want to take a domestic abuse case to court? Most guys wouldn't. Most guys will just take the suspension and hopefully move on and deal with the criminal side of things. Try to work their way out of that. No, this was a unique case. And it was a unique case because, as I said earlier, Tom Brady couldn't take a suspension. He couldn't just suck it up and take a suspension. Because it wasn't just, all right, yeah, I did something in a game I shouldn't have done. I'll take the two-game suspension. I went after a guy's helmet, or I went after this, or I got it ejected, I hit an official, or whatever. No. Brady was dealing with, if I take a suspension, I am forever a cheat. If I fight this, I at least somewhat protect my legacy, and I may be able to turn people who may look at this situation and go, stop already, enough, this is dumb. So this is pride on Roger Goodell's part, and that's why it's in the news. I wish it wasn't in the news, but it is. I kind of hope Tom Brady wins, not because I'm a Patriots fan, but because I liked it when he kicked Roger Goodell in the face. Let's be honest. I had a good time with that. I remember when they went to court, I said, oh, he's not going to win. The NFL is too powerful. And I remembered, hey, you know what? Brady's got some pretty powerful lawyers too. And when he won, I thought, you know what? I wonder if all the players in the league go, man, I may not like the Patriots. I may think they're a dirty organization. My respect for Tom Brady may be up or down or whatever. But you know what? Man, he won one for us. This guy's thinking he can do whatever he wants, and our union doesn't seem strong enough to stop him. But Tom Brady went, fine, I'll take you to court. Sit down and shut up, Commissioner. Very good. Very, very good. Coming up next, it could be my new favorite college football team. Slim, but maybe. Michigan, next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, 15 minutes from now, Tim Sullivan from the Wolverine. This has been one of my favorite stories. I got to be honest with you, man. The Michigan Wolverines going down to Florida and every SEC coach has lost their mind. I just can't tell you how happy this story makes me. Because listen, I'm an SEC guy. I love the SEC. I love the conference. I really do. And it runs in my house. We have four different SEC fans in my house. South Carolina, my wife went to Florida, my son loves Vanderbilt because we live in Nashville, and my daughter, for whatever reason, loves Kentucky. So we're an SEC family. But man, sometimes I need somebody to poke the bear. I need somebody to sort of pop a couple of balloons. There is a level of arrogance. There is a level of entitlement that I feel like needs to be brought down a notch. And Jim Harbaugh is the perfect guy to do this. So the trucks go down to Bradenton so he can work out of this IMG Academy. Somehow the SEC got it in their minds that you shouldn't be doing this. And Harbaugh is attacking them back on Twitter. And I think Adam made a really good point. You were telling me he doesn't even address the people by their names.
No, he doesn't. Nobody. Nobody by name.
He just says always the Tennessee coach.
Yeah. Well, I think this, he actually said the Rocky Top coach.
Rocky Top, that's right. The Rocky Top coach, that's right. Which is even better.
Right.
Hinting that he's got enough problems to deal with.
And the best part is, he really doesn't even address Brett Bielema.
Bielema's
been the most outspoken one.
Yeah. And no one in the SEC addresses Brett Bielema either, but still.
He's just there.
Right. Well done, Jim Harbaugh. I mean, well done. This is what I like about Jim Harbaugh. And I've said this for years and years about college sports. One of the jobs you have as a college coach is obviously to win games. But the other part of your job in winning games, that you have to make the fan base really, really proud of your school. So if the wins don't come, you are still presenting a program that the alumni can feel really proud of. Look, most alumni are smart. You're not going to win a national championship every year. And most alumni are smart. Sometimes some years, you just are grooming talent. You know, that's it. You try to reload, but sometimes you have an off year. Doesn't always happen in Alabama, but nevertheless, most schools go through the ebb and flow. But if you're a coach that can consistently do good things or do things in a way that makes the alumni feel really, really proud, then you're doing your job. Even when you're not winning titles or going to major bowl games or being ranked in the top 10 or whatever, but you can have an off year or two as long as you make them feel proud. All they want to do is love their team, and they want you to help them love it more. And Jim Harbaugh, because he went to Michigan, but I got to be honest with you, I think Jim Harbaugh would be like this even if he didn't go to Michigan. If just Harbaugh was, he played his football at UCLA and just wanted to get in the college coaching game and had success at Stanford, and the Michigan job was open and they hired him to come to Michigan and he was an outsider, I think he'd be doing the exact same thing. But it's just this added graciousness from the alumni because he's a Michigan guy, that when he does things like signing of the stars, of course we would do signing of the stars. We have Derek Jeter and Tom Brady. What else would you expect us to do? For crying out loud, we're Michigan. Go down to the South to have a practice at IMG Academy in Bradenton and step on a few SEC toes? Of course we would. Why would we not go down there? Who's going to tell Michigan what to do? All right, so now you're an alumni of Michigan, and you're getting these kind of vibes from Jim Harbaugh. We don't get pushed around by the SEC. We're coming back. My God, we're Michigan for crying out loud. We should be doing these kind of things. We should be celebrating our recruits. We should be breaking out the big guns of a Derek Jeter or a Tom Brady. Of course we should. We're Michigan. These kids should be proud to be coming to Michigan. We're going to sure as hell make them feel proud that they're going to Michigan. I love it. I love it. And again, look at what he's doing in the SEC. Look at the feathers that he's just rustling up. He's even got the commissioner, for crying out loud, Greg Sankey, making comments about this. Greg Sankey should be nowhere near this. It doesn't look good for the conference. If he wants to let his coaches fight it out with coaches, fine. Greg Sankey shouldn't be that concerned with this enough to make a statement. Be above this. But no, Harbaugh's rattled it. Now I will say that this was something I kind of wished Urban Meyer would do, that Urban Meyer doesn't do. And I'm really glad Harbaugh's doing it. I really am. Starting to like Michigan. I'm starting to like this.
Well,
I love it.
The whole argument, you know, that the SEC and the original coaches come out and argued was about the spring break, which we all knew it wasn't that.
Right.
But just to take that point, I mean, there's nothing wrong with what's going on right now. These kids love the fact that they get to go to Florida, because not all these kids were going on spring break. You know, a lot of them were like, yeah, I'd be probably sitting in my dorm room, or I would have went home to another cold place and not done anything.
Of course.
I would have just hung out at home. Instead, we get to go get a little work in, and these kids are on the beach every single night. They're all posting pictures from the beach.
I'll tell you right now, it's amazing kids go on spring break. I mean, yeah. Parents usually have to fit the bill. Most kids don't work. They go to college, they have a good time. I know I went into debt going on spring break trips.
Well, and like we talked about, I think it was a few weeks back, you know, these kids go on trips by themselves. Look what happened to Dak Prescott.
Right.
You know, wouldn't you rather just take, as a football coach, take your team to and have a nice bonding trip?
I know it's kind of apples and oranges, because they're at different times and the rules are kind of different. But I equate this to when basketball teams go to Europe.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Like, yes. when a team goes, hey, you know what? We're going to go to Italy, and we're going to go to Spain, and we're going to play a couple of games, or we're going to go to Australia, or we're going to go play in Japan, and we're going to go on these trips. Colleges do this all the time with their basketball teams, and it's kind of allowed. They do it in the summer and whatnot, and that's kind of the way coaches go, hey, we're going to take a trip. We're going to try to expand the brand a little bit internationally. We're going to work with our kids, get some practice time, and get them ready for the upcoming season. It's good for the kids. It's good. This feels like that to me. This feels like Jim Harbaugh saying, look, are we going to do major work when we're down there? Probably not. We're going to do some drills, do some things, get ourselves loose. But you know what this is? We're going to come together. We're all going to go on a trip, and we are Michigan, and we're going to represent Michigan. Yeah, we're going to do some work down there, but we're going to have a good time too, because this is what we can do. We're in the boundaries of the rules. So again, Tim Sullivan coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk to him about this, because I'm crazy about it. I've got a man crush on Jim Harbaugh now.
What I would love to see Jim Harbaugh do next year, assuming this, you know, the NCAA doesn't come out and be like, oh, this is, we're putting a stop to this. This is against the rules.
Good God,
now,
I hope
not. Would be awful. It'd be a terrible decision. I hope Harbaugh comes out next year and he's like, you know what? I don't even care about the SEC in Florida and that. Let's go to Hawaii, you know, and make it a different
trip
every year, you know?
Good point.
Yeah, of course, he's going down to Bradenton. I think they have 13 of the top 300 players in the country in this next class.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely a recruiting trip, but he can't talk to these kids. It's not like he's out there, you know,
shaking
hands.
Oh, they can't even go to practice, right? Yeah. They can't even go to practice.
They will go to the one tonight, or Friday night, because it's an open practice.
He has that, and just by osmosis, the Michigan aura fills the place for a while.
Yeah.
And he gets that.
Yeah.
But it's good for the kids. It's good for the program. He's rubbing in it. It's like a perfect storm of greatness with this decision. It's a great idea. I'm surprised no one else has done it. We'll break this down with Tim Sullivan next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, welcome back. Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. All right, you've heard us talk about Michigan going down to Florida to have a practice, and now it's ruffling the feathers of coaches in the SEC. I think it's brilliant, but let's get the inside scoop on where this is going and how this all came about. Tim Sullivan joins us. He covers Michigan for the Wolverine.com. He joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, talk a little bit about this trip and give us an idea of where the idea came from for Michigan to go practice down in Florida.
Well, a big part of it was that Jim Harbaugh simply likes to do things to ruffle some feathers, and obviously he succeeded in this case. And another part was he wanted to give his team a chance to get their first week of practice in without worrying about school, and doing so over spring break was the idea that he came up with for that. Obviously, his players weren't going to be too happy with sticking around Ann Arbor, missing out on the spring break opportunity, so he said, you know what, let's take them on a trip with us. Let's go down to Florida. And they're practicing at the IMG Academy in Bradenton. Obviously, that has some recruiting aspects to it because IMG Academy is loaded with top prospects. But those kids aren't allowed to see Michigan practice all week. The Wolverines have an open practice Friday night. That one will be open to the public, and the kids from the school can stop by and see that one. Other than that, it really is a business trip for Michigan.
All right, so you mentioned earlier, and I've said it all since bringing up the story, that it is ruffling some feathers. So is there an unwritten rule that's being broken? Obviously, he's not doing anything wrong, but is there like a gentleman's agreement that you don't come to other turfs of other conferences?
If there is, Jim Harbaugh is certainly not aware of it. And I think more than anything, it's not necessarily there's an unwritten rule. It's just that nobody's really thought of the idea before. And those who come from the South are a little unhappy that maybe a school from the North is getting a chance to experience the South during their spring practice. Obviously getting a little bit of exposure in Florida, regardless of whether or not they can directly contact recruits while they're down here. And I think that's the bigger issue more so than any sort of agreement being broken, unspoken or otherwise.
All right, now, as far as the NCAA, this is all legit, but is there a hours rule that they have to kind of go by during spring practices?
It's the same as any sort of spring practice. You get a maximum, I think, of 20 hours a week, 4 hours a day. They're only doing four practices while they're down here, so they're getting 16 hours this week while they're practicing in Florida. 4 days worth of four-hour practices, and they're using every second of those 4 hours.
All right. Now, one of the things I like about Jim Harbaugh is that he's been so unconventional in terms of his recruiting and things like this. He had the signing of the stars. I'd never really seen anything like that in all of my time covering recruiting. In terms of what Harbaugh is doing, is it coming from a sense of Michigan pride? Is he saying, of course I can do this. We're Michigan. We should be doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. The biggest aspect is he's just simply looking for new ways to find his name and to find Michigan's name in the news, because he knows that every bit of publicity can help. And obviously, he's getting every bit of publicity that's available out there, basically. I think he's basically all anybody has talked about during the offseason, it seems, at times.
I'm kind of curious, and I don't know if you've heard from other coaches through Twitter or conversations or whatnot. Again, the SEC can grumble all they want, but are other coaches outside going, hey, man, that's really brilliant. I don't know why I didn't think of that.
Yeah, I think that Mark D'Antonio from Michigan State, obviously one of Michigan's biggest rivals, said, yeah, you know, if we had thought of that, we would certainly be doing it. I don't think that there's anything wrong with it, and it's simply an innovative idea. Urban Meyer said that, you know, if we had thought of it, Ohio State would be practicing down in Florida, and it sounds like if it continues to be permissible, that the Buckeyes will be thinking about doing it next year. So I think other than the coaches who kind of are speaking out against it, probably from their own pragmatic reasons for speaking out against it, I think most are somewhere along the spectrum of approval. Maybe there's a spectrum in there of jealousy, but I don't think that there's a whole lot of disapproval from those types.
Tim Sullivan joins us. He covers Michigan for the Wolverine.com as Michigan is having a spring practice down in Florida. Tim, I know he was the best man for the job, and he's also a Michigan alum. But taking the best man for the job out of the equation for a second, was it important for Michigan to land a guy like Harbaugh that had Michigan roots for this opening?
I think so, but more importantly, as you mentioned, is finding the best man for the job. And I think if they had found a guy who had no Michigan connections who was going to win a lot of football games, they would have been fine with that, too. And the fact that the single best man for the job, no questions asked, was a guy who not only played at Michigan, but has a pretty deep passion for Michigan, which is a huge bonus.
What was different? Well, from a guy who's covered this team and knew what the program was like before, is there a tangible difference in the way they acted or the way they talked or the way they looked on the field? What was the tangible difference that he made in his first year?
I think the big thing that you see is Brady Hoke arrived just over 4 years ago saying, we're going to be tougher. We're going to, you know, be true men. And when Harbaugh came in, he said some of the same things, but once the ball hit toe on the field, you actually saw those things on a down-to-down basis. And obviously, Harbaugh has a track record of turning around teams that have kind of struggled a little bit. Stanford with the San Francisco 49ers. And I think one thing that you saw that you haven't seen in a long time at Michigan was a team that improved over the course of the year and seems like it's going to improve from year to year, whereas you kind of saw diminishing returns in the past. This is a Michigan team that won 10 games for the first time since 2011, and they did it with a roster that mostly returns this season, and I think that's a big deal. I think that's the biggest thing for Michigan because you can see a path to them continuing to improve.
The thing about Harbaugh that I liked for this, not only for this job because he was a Michigan guy, but he comes in with the college coaching experience and the NFL coaching experience, but he's dealing with two different kinds of people, right? The college kids versus the professional athlete. When they lost to Michigan State in the way they lost it, how did he handle that knowing he was still grooming young men?
Yeah, he handled it. I think privately he wasn't going to say anything negative about his team publicly, but it beat him up privately. And I think we've seen in the past the way that he kind of reacts to not only failure but also success is looking for a way to improve and get better no matter what. But he didn't throw his players under the bus, even though there were a couple really key plays in the Michigan State game that you saw that, oh man, if one play is different, the outcome of the game is different. And he didn't blame the guys who were responsible for negative plays there. He said, in order to team loss, we're going to move along. The only thing we can do is get better. And that was the plan, was to get better and not worry about the specific things that you can say that missed opportunities.
He has taken his shots back at the SEC coaches who have been critical. How does he feel about the SEC, the dominance that it's had in the media, the dominance that it's had on the football field, winning national titles? How does he feel about that conference?
You know, I don't think he feels specifically about it just because of the success that they've had on the field. He knows that they're king of the mountain, and he certainly wants to be in that position himself, so he wants to take them down a notch for that reason. But I think a bigger issue for him is the way they've reacted to his arrival, the way they've reacted to every move that he's made. It seems like you have SEC coaches, you have the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey. They all seem to be more worried about what he's doing than taking care of themselves. And I think that actually pleases him because he wants to be in their heads a little bit, because he wants to be at the top, and he knows to be at the top, those are the guys that you have to pass. If they're worried about you, they're not worried about themselves, and that gives you an opportunity to fill in that gap and take over where they're maybe starting to slip a little bit.
All right, real quick, I got like less than 60 seconds. Give me an idea of the expectations coming into this season. As players move in and out, the Wolverines for 2016, what's the expectation?
As long as they get great quarterback play, there's no reason to expect that they don't improve from last year. They return almost everybody else other than Jake Rudock, who was the starter. They do have somebody who can fill in. John O'Korn, a Houston transfer who wasn't eligible last year. Many said if he was eligible after transferring, he could have been the starter over Rudock. As long as he can play to about Rudock's level, I think there's a really good chance that the team has improved, and that should lead to an improved record as well.
Tim Sullivan, the Wolverine on Michigan. A lot in the news. I really appreciate your time.
Yep, thank you.
All right, coming up next, a great, great night of television, both in politics and in sports. That is next. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, our thanks to Tim Sullivan talking Michigan football. I think what Jim Harbaugh has done is brilliant up there. I think he is taking the aspects of college football. I think he's turning it upside down. I think he's making Michigan fans feel proud of the program. I think he's changing recruiting. I think he's smart to go down to Florida. I think it accomplishes many things. It puts the program and makes a presence in an area, especially the IMG Academy. It gives the team a sense of unity. They're going on a trip. It also, you know, rubs the SEC the wrong way, and that's always pretty good. Anytime you can take a little battle to them and take a little bit of a hit to the SEC, you take it. There's no harm done. No one's going to lose their job over it. He's within the rules. I think it's brilliant. I thought tonight was really entertaining television. Both the GOP debate and the Golden State Warriors, and they are related in this way. I think people who are looking at politics and demanding or wishing that politics was straight up, everyone's equal, all the candidates get a chance to speak, every candidate gets to talk about the issues, every candidate gets to say what's on their mind and how they're going to change this country, I think is delusional. I think these debates are nothing more than ratings grabs by the networks that carry them. Donald Trump is a big personality. He moves ratings. I think that's why we're seeing a zillion debates. I feel like there's one every other week. If you don't know the issues already, my God, either look them up or find another way to get them, because you're not getting them anymore from these debates. As long as these guys have delegates to win, they're going to fight and duke it out and make this reality television. And in a way, it's very similar to what's going on in the NBA. You can lament all day about the uncompetitiveness outside of Golden State and maybe the Cleveland Cavaliers in San Antonio, saying you wish that there was a bigger net of NBA teams that could win the NBA title. But this is an entertaining year in that we are getting a television show with the Golden State Warriors that I think is must-see TV. If you're not up late to watch it, well, then what are you listening to this? But nevertheless, you should be up late watching the Golden State Warriors. They're really fun. And for those of you who have been watching them, They're an amazing train. They are a machine. And there's a frustration on the other teams that can't seem to get them. Nothing sticks. Just like you're seeing Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz coming after Donald Trump. It doesn't seem to be sticking. Doesn't seem to be working. Kevin Durant and Kevin Westbrook are giving all they have to Golden State and nothing's working. San Antonio tried to do the exact same thing. Nothing's working. Right, the Golden State Warriors are a well put together machine, and there is no chatter and no focus on the team that's in second place. Earlier tonight, I made the comparison that the San Antonio Spurs are the Sammy Sosa of the NBA. You remember Sammy Sosa, right? Yeah, that guy. Remember when Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were going for the home run record? Remember how they were battling it out and made that summer of 1998 really fun? You know, Mark McGwire got the home run record. He got all the glory. Sammy Sosa came in second, but he broke the record too. He broke Roger Maris's record too. He just happened to do it in a year that Mark McGwire did it. Now we know that's all because of what happened afterward with the steroid allegations. But nevertheless, it's like that with San Antonio. They are putting together a remarkable year. A remarkable year. I mean, they're 52-9. 52-9. They have the best defense in the NBA. They've transitioned out of the big three. They have Kawhi Leonard taking that team over now. They have LaMarcus Aldridge, who has been a fantastic fit. They get scoring from a lot of different ways. It is everything that you know about a Greg Popovich-led team, but it's better. It might be one of the best teams he's ever had. Why don't you know about this stuff? Because Golden State is killing everybody. And Golden State is the story. And they're really the only story. What do we, when we look at the NBA, who else is being talked about with greatness? Nobody. Nobody outside the Warriors. Nobody's paying attention to the Spurs. The Oklahoma City Thunder can't close out games. They've lost 10 games in which they had the lead in the fourth quarter. And there is drama on every level with the Cleveland Cavaliers, from firing David Blatt to Kevin Love's role with the team to Kyrie Irving being happy to LeBron James going down to Miami to work out with Dwayne Wade and setting Cleveland into a panic. So think about this in terms of the NBA. The Golden State Warriors are awesome. Steph Curry is amazing. This team is going to set the record for most wins during the regular season. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see greatness. Spurs, who are they? Cleveland, way too much drama. And Oklahoma City, I don't think they can win a game in the playoffs at this rate. So that's the NBA we've got. Much like the GOP debate, where it's just noise. It's just guys yelling at each other, accusing people of running scam schools and voting for amnesty and the Gang of Eight and who's telling the truth and Liar Ted and Marco's got little hands and Donald Trump's got little hands and that me know I have big hands and that means big you know what. That's all went on in the debate tonight. That kind of rhetoric. But the NBA has got its issues and noise and problems too. And the Golden State Warriors make it for great television. It's like I was saying earlier tonight, anybody that watches these debates and says, I want issues. I want candidates to talk about the issues. No, you don't. You want entertainment. Come on. You can get issues anywhere. If you're that dedicated to finding the issues, you can get issues anywhere. You can find these guys' records. You can go online and see how they voted. You can read articles about them. If immigration's your thing, you can find the stance on all these guys and gal. You want entertainment. The Golden State Warriors are entertainment. Everything else around the NBA pales in comparison. We don't need 15 teams competing. We don't need 10. We don't need 5. Heck, we don't need 2. Golden State is the entertainment of the NBA. What they're doing is the noise of the debate, and it's working. It's working for the debate in ratings, and it's working for the NBA in droves.